The Janice Daniels Show. Janice
Daniels Show. Repeat after me. America is a republic, and there's nothing democratic about the Democrat Party. Let's get our words right, people.
She's tough.
What part of shall not infringe don't you legislators understand? Read the Constitution. Read the Bill of Rights. Read the stupid so-called laws that you guys sign your names to. Your focus is shameful.
She's smart.
And besides, what have you legislators done that gives you power over us? Trick the people into electing you? Swearing an oath that you don't seem to understand or follow?
She's tenacious.
I say bring the Electoral College to the county level for all national elections so Michigan isn't governed by sanctuary jurisdictions like Wayne and Washtenaw counties.
She's sassy.
Michigan has a big problem. We have too many people who exhibit seditious behavior in elected office, and that needs to change. I'm hoping against hope we can change the change. Let's talk about some of this stuff on the Janice Daniels Show. This could be fun.
And now, your host, Janice Daniels.
And the word of the day is sedition. Now, I've spent a little time researching the history of the word sedition in the United States, and as time allows this afternoon, I might want to get into some of my observations on sedition, but the overall concern that I have is the seditionists seem to have infiltrated our government at all levels. I can hear you all now saying, geez, this lady really knows how to have a good time, and I do. But first, last week I asked my erudite audience to give me their impressions on three concepts, liberty, the law, and heritage, in preparation of this week's show. My initial concern that brought us to this place is just what we can do to restore our American Republic. Remember, roar, restore our American Republic. That's our goal. And specifically with regards to the Michigan women of sedition who have infiltrated our government, whether by design or by ignorance. Now, if I can lay out a cogent case to bring a presentment against our governor for sedition, that's what I would like to do. But I need to know the legal vehicle that we could use to drive this case into our judiciary for an indictment and possible removal. That's the genesis of my reaching out to our guest, Mr. John Darish, the founder of National Liberty Alliance. Welcome, Mr. Darish, to the Janice Daniels Show.
Yeah, how you doing, Janice? Thanks for having us, and good to be here.
Thank you so much. I'm doing very well. Thank you. If you had an opportunity to listen to my show last week, some of the comments from my audience were that the purpose of the law is to create a fair balance. The heritage is the law and liberty. Everybody was created equal. One of my listeners quoted Jefferson, unobstructed action according to our will, only according to the equal rights of others, not including the law, because the law is often just the tyrant's will, and always so when it violates the equal rights of the individual. Another person said that liberty was life without undue interference from governments or others. And another lady called in and said that true heritage is God's natural laws. How do my audience members fit into your concept of educated American citizens?
Well, I have to say they get high ratings. Absolutely. You know, few people realize this, and it sounds like your listeners have been listening and studying themselves. And indeed, you know, our heritage is the law. And the law is the common law, which is our natural law, law under God's rule. And with that comes the blessings of liberty. And this heritage frees us from all government, interaction. Well, wouldn't say interaction, all government control over us. In other words, we're not under statutes. All the statutes that are written by our legislators that we gave them the authority to write, the codes, the statutes, the regulations, under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, there was 17 different powers plus that we gave them, and the 18th power was the power to write law for those other 17 powers. But all of that was for the sole purpose of controlling themselves, to control government. You know, they've written laws under code, U.S. Code 1 all the way through to 57. And again, each one of those codes, it's called really, it's equity in law. And all those different titles, control a specific part of government. For instance, Title III is the law that the president is operating under, and he must be obedient to that. You know, Congress is under Title II, and the judiciary is under Title 28, and so on. But we, the people, are under no title. We don't answer to any of their statutes, codes. They don't have the authority to write anything that controls our behavior. And that's the key that people need to understand. We go to natural law courts, and they claim to have abrogated that back in 1938 under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. So therein is the major problem that we do have.
I agree with you that the laws are not supposed to be written to control us and burden us and put a thumb on us, but we have for centuries now allowed our government officials to do just that.
And, through ignorance, yes.
I mean, it's gotten to the point where you can't even read the laws, and I think it was James Madison that talked about how could the people know what the law is when it changes from day to day. That's paraphrasing what he said in a Federalist paper, I think, 62. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that we are at a juncture now that we have to use some kind of means to be able to fight back. And fight, I say fight, because I believe that we've got to use the law to fix the law and what they've done to it. I don't want to pick up arms. I want to pick up a pen. You know, the pen is mightier than the sword. And I want to be able to figure out a way to bring a case, particularly against the governor of the state of Michigan. Now, I know on your website, nationallibertyalliance.org, that's nationallibertyalliance.org, it seems that you have taken that common law grand jury concept and actually put it into action. But how much success are you finding? Because I see that you've filed writs of mandamus and indictments and et cetera. And I don't know that it's done much good for the people in the arena of public awareness.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, look, it's an uphill battle. There's no doubt about it. We've been in the courts for quite some time. You know, by the way, Gerard's trying to get a hold of me. Maybe I could try to pull him into this call.
And Gerard is the co-founder of National Liberty Alliance?
Right.
Sure.
There's two founders,
if you can
and
do
myself.
Yeah.
Let me see if I could pull him in. If I get disconnected, I'm sure your whoever's controlling the call can pull me back in, right?
I'm sure he can. He's a genius.
Yeah. All right, let me see if I can get him in here.
All right. And his name is Gerard, you say? Well, I don't know. It looks like my guest is trying to get his guest. Basically, I want to tell my guest when he gets back on the line, you know, when I look at the law, it's almost impossible to understand. However, if you really go in and try to find something that might be applicable to your case, for example, I see that Title 8 U.S.C. 1324 defines several distinct offenses relating to aliens. It prohibits alien smuggling, domestic transportation of unauthorized aliens, concealing or harboring unauthorized aliens, encouraging or inducing unauthorized aliens to enter the United States. That's enough for me to say that I think that our governor has got a problem with what she is attempting to do. She has renamed one of the multitude of departments that has the swarms of officers beating down our doors and over-regulating everything we do and say and see and think almost, but she has renamed an office, the Office of Global Michigan, and she has appointed a practicing Muslim to head that Office of Global Michigan. Now, what does the mission statement of that particular office say it is supposed to do? Well, they want to empower refugees, immigrants, and people from the international community to come to Michigan as an opportunity, a place of opportunity. Now, I'm wondering, Is there a legal mandate for a governor of a state, any state, to take actions on a global rather than a state level? Is there a legitimate authority that gives a governor in a state the authority to appoint a person who holds an allegiance to a foreign god, Allah, and a concurrent foreign legal system, Sharia? I mean, how dangerous can we get? Every single elected official takes an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. You can't hold an allegiance to Sharia law or allow adherence to Sharia law to hold high office in a department that is designed to bring foreign people into our country. I wonder if my guest is back on the line. He is, John. Apparently he's not. I thought he was.
Nope, I'm here.
You're here.
Did
you hear what I laid out in terms of this Department of Global Michigan that our governor has appointed a practicing Muslim to head? Did you hear that?
Let's go back into a little bit of what natural law is and where it comes from and how something like that might come to play. You know, natural law finds its, you know, goes all the way back into biblical times. It goes back to about 1600 BC. And when the Jews had left Egypt and they were migrating for 40 years wandering in the wilderness and then eventually came into the Promised Land, during that time period, and even when they got to the Promised Land, many people wanted to live under the rule of Israel because they enjoyed the liberties, the law. As long as they were willing to accept that law and accept that process and not adulterate it, they were welcomed. And so that's the key. You know, America is open to atheists, Muslims, Christians, Jews, anybody. But we do have a law. We're under the law. We're under natural law. We're under certain rules and processes of how we operate as a nation. And when people take an oath to serve and protect that Constitution, to support it and protect it, then they need to put their personal things aside. For instance, any individual, and we get a lot of them, that are trying to get all these gun laws and get rid of guns and so on and so forth, these are elected individuals that took an oath. And the Second Amendment is not something that was legislated or agreed upon. That's an unalienable right, the right to protect yourself, not only to protect yourself personally in your own home and your own property, but also, and most importantly, to protect yourself from government. That's the purpose of the Second Amendment. And so anybody who gets up there and comes into office and has some power and authority and then starts to try to legislate laws to destroy our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, is not upholding and supporting the Constitution and therefore should be removed from office.
That's my premise. That's exactly my premise. And she, in fact, our governor of the state of Michigan, as far as I'm concerned, by utilizing this department. And when I say practicing Muslim, I'm not, making any kind of a statement against any people or any person. I love all people. But when you hold allegiance to a foreign god, that says to me that you don't hold allegiance to the Judeo-Christian God of our country. When you hold allegiance to Sharia law, that means you don't hold allegiance to a constitutional law, and so therein lies a problem.
They should not be holding office. And if they do come into office making those views, then they need to be removed from office. But they can have them views and beliefs as long as they're willing to live under the law of the land, which is the Constitution, and of course natural law and equity is part of that process. And as long as they're willing to live under, to operate under that, they can believe what they want, and they must, support and defend that. And again, if they don't, and they start bringing in things alien to who we are as a people, then yes, they need to be removed. It's called bad behavior.
Okay. As far as I'm concerned, it's going to be too late if, in fact, we don't do something to stop this particular mission of this office. Because, quite frankly, if we bring in a whole group of potential Sharia-compliant foreign people into our country who do not want to follow our Constitution, but who move into Michigan and get a driver's license and then they get the right to vote— that will distort our elections for centuries to come. We won't have a free and fair election any longer. That's my real concern. So this isn't something that I want to think about doing 15 years from now. I want to do it today before the 2020 elections. I want to see something happen, you know, this week, this month, this year. How is it that I can do that?
Let's go back to the basics. You know, we have government by the consent of the people. That is the key. And the question is how do the people consent to government? You know, the Constitution is something that we the people, you know, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. That's written right there in the preamble, the beginning of the Constitution. The Declaration of Independence is the foundation for that structure, that framework of the Constitution that governs us or governs our government as by we the people. And the Bill of Rights is the capstone which protects our Constitution from being misinterpreted. For instance, the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights. So anything that is repugnant to that Bill of Rights is null and void and cannot be part of law. Now, when our founding fathers put this government together, I don't know if did I get lost? I just heard it sounded like okay. When our founding fathers put this government together, of course, they broke it up into three branches, and they broke the powers up. And, of course, there's the judicial branch, there is the political, the administrative branch, and there's the legislative branch. And so there is that separation of powers, but there's also we the people. And, you take the states. The states are represented by the Senate, which, of course, they destroyed, and that's a major problem that needs to be fixed,
right,
which was put through the 17th Amendment. And the 17th Amendment, by the way, was never ratified, and it's something, you know, we need to fix as soon as possible. But the states have a say in how this government operates through the Senate. They have a right to a vote. So if the Senate disagrees with whatever Congress wants to do, which is the people's representative, it's not going to go through. But if the people disagree with what the Senate might want to do, again, it's not going to go through. Now, of course, the Senate has certain controls. For instance, they get to decide or bring people up and decide whether they want this person to become a judge, because they're appointed by the president, and the Senate has to approve them. So the Senate gets to approve all of those appointments, not just in the judiciary, but other appointments that the president might make. So there is that balance of power, and the people play a role in that balance of power. They just have lost it. They've lost that authority. They've lost that knowledge. We, the people, need to take control of the two powers that control our government, which is the political power and the judicial power. And under common law, it is the people that is the tribunal, 12 individuals, which are the jury. And they're supposed to be unadulterated, you know, untainted by any kind of a government restriction or some kind of a law or statute that they are told to follow. That would be tainting a jury. They're supposed to be free and independent. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is working on. We came together as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, working throughout the nation, in every state, going to every county, and getting the people to agree that this needs to be reinstated. And in that process, we accumulated a lot of people, and we established a unified state grand jury in every state, and then those state grand juries came together as a unified United States common law grand jury, and therefore we speak as a nation in one voice to correct the problems first in the judiciary and then second in the political, you know, realm. And that's what we need to do. We should be controlling the courts without any interference by a judge. No judges belong in a court, in a court of law. A court of law is to be run by the people, And it's to be presided over, in a sense, by a magistrate. And they don't really preside over it. What they do is they're administrators. It's presided over, really, by the tribunal, which is the 12 jurists. And the administrator of the court, which is the person who sits up there, looks like a judge, but he's not a judge. He's a magistrate. And he is to put forward the will of that tribunal. So whatever that tribunal decides, they get to decide not only whether if it's an equity case against an individual that works for the government. They can decide whether that law, whether they like that law or not. They can just nullify it and ignore it. But as far as the people are concerned, they can't be held by anything in equity. They're not held by any of these statutes. They're only held under natural law. And in natural law, there must be, you know, there must be an injured party in order for there to be a court case. And that's how that proceeds through. But nevertheless, the control of that court is by the jury. The jury decides whether the person is innocent or guilty. The jury decides what the punishment needs to be, which needs to fit the crime in the sense that you have to restore the injured party. Jail is not necessarily the answer. In most cases, it shouldn't be. Only in violent cases. But generally speaking, people shouldn't be put in jail. They should be forced to restore the individual that they injured. And of course, in the system that's running today, that doesn't happen. But that's the part of the process, is to decide innocent and guilt, to decide how to restore the injured party, and to decide if it's an equity case where, you know, again, where something's brought against someone who is in government and it's a criminal thing, they get to decide whether that law, whether they like that law or not. Now, as long as the people can control the courts, and we can get courts that are untainted juries, and again, that's what we're building across this nation. We're looking to build an administration in every county for individuals that will control the process of orientating the juries, whether it's the grand jury or the trial jury, making sure they're not tainted and making sure that their will is done properly without anybody adding or taking away from that will. And the government does that all the time. We're going to make sure that that doesn't happen. When that happens and we have that kind of control, where the people have access to their juries, where people can come, the grand jury that is, and they can come and make a complaint and try to get some kind of justice without interference from the government, we then will have government by the people, because the people will have the ability to indict an individual in power, for instance, for a crime. And once that happens, they're removed from office. They can't continue in office. You know, if Congress isn't going to do their job through impeachment for all these people and bad behavior, then we, the people, need to do that. And we have every right to do that. We've written it in the Constitution. We wrote it in the Declaration of Independence. Our founding fathers echoed it many times, that we have the power and the authority to change government, to remove people in government, and replace those servants. Now, on the political side, there is the control of who gets onto the ticket for voting, you know, who's going to get onto the ballot. And today, just about anybody gets on the ballot as long as they're a criminal. Because the people do not control the political process through the committee man process. It is a top-down control. Well, the people have to take that back, and that's another thing that National Liberty Alliance is working on. That's our second part to what we're doing, is to bring back the political authority back to the people, where only statesmen, people who know the Constitution, quiz on the Constitution, and only then, after interviewing them, will we put them on a ballot. And we have a plan to reinstate that back also, which with what is called the elected committeemen. Again, they abrogated that whole process. There are no elected committeemen. And the same thing in juries. There are no untainted juries. They're all stacked. And until we take those two positions back, we have no control of our government. But once we do take those two, you know, power structures back, then we have 100% control of our government, because the committeemen have the power not only to put people onto the ballot, they also have the power of recall. And when they don't do the will of the people, they can recall them. And once they get recalled, then they can put someone else in office. So that's where the people need to understand and come to take that power, take that authority, and get involved.
Wow. How long has the National Liberty Alliance been trying to set this process straight?
Well, this goes before, you know, we've been involved, and eventually we became National Liberty Alliance, I think it was back in 2013. Prior to that, we were New York committeemen, and then, prior to that, we were New York Alliance, Liberty Alliance, and then before that, we were New York committeemen, and then before that, we were with other organizations like Robert Schultz's We the People.
John, do you have time to stay over for the break? We can continue this conversation.
Sure.
All right, that's very good. I also wanted to mention to my audience that Trump rids a major U.S. container port of Chinese communist control. Los Angeles isn't going to be under Chinese communist control, but I'll tell you a little bit more about that after the break.
The Janice Daniels Show. Janice Daniels Show. On Wham! Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM.
Well, I probably got you all excited now that we find out, according to a Judicial Watch article, that Trump rids major U.S. container port of Chinese communist control. That sounds like a great thing. The article says the Long Beach terminal business, which handles millions of containers annually, is finally being sold to an Australian company named Macquarie Infrastructure Partners. So, you know me. I like to do my research. I went to the Macquarie Group homepage, which is the parent company. Macquarie Group homepage says that they are interested in mitigating and adapting to climate change. And then they have a page all about gender equality. So I guess it's a situation of pick your poison. Our Goliath is global. And that is a fact. We're joined today by a gentleman named John Darish, who's giving us a very interesting education on our American history and the law and what we can do to use the law to restore the proper constitutional law of this country. John, were you able to get your co-founder to join the conversation, by the way?
Yeah, I haven't been able to get him connected. He was connected for a moment, but he dropped away. I haven't been able to pull him back.
So. Okay, so we'll just continue the conversation, you and me. Yep. That sounds like fun. You mentioned the...
I'd like to go back to your original question a little earlier, where you spoke about or asked, you know, what kind of success we're having, what we're doing, where we're going, that kind of a thing.
Okay.
Really, this is a collective work by We the People, by many organizations. And We the People, by Robert Schultz, I don't know if you're familiar with the organization We the People that Robert Schultz put together. And back in 2000, he was trying to get the government together to come in to talk with them, to have a conference, you know, to have a talk and to try to work out the problems that the government was abusing the people by. So Robert Schultz put together, through his organization called We the People, in 2002, we had a Truth in Taxation hearing, and that was broadcasted off of C-SPAN in Washington, D.C. And the conclusion of that, and we did invite government to that particular conference, and as a matter of fact, that day was President Bush. He said he would send a representative, but they never showed up. But it was concluded at that our courts of law have been closed. In 2004, we put together a conference to restore constitutional order, and that also was broadcasted over C-SPAN, but that too fell on deaf ears with our government. In 2008, we had a decision by the United States Supreme Court, and their decision was a denial to answer the questions concerning our right of redress of grievances. I think we did that a little earlier on. It took many years to get through the process, but the United States Supreme Court refused to answer.
Wow, isn't that one of our constitutional protections? I mean, isn't that one of the First Amendments in our Bill of Rights, that we have the right to redress of grievances? And you're telling me that the Supreme Court in 2008 declined to allow us that right?
That's absolutely correct. Look at... And people need to understand this, and they need to get upset about this and step up and get active to do something about this, because we must hit critical mass. And critical mass is the key to getting this job done. And again, organizing across the United States and getting the people behind us and keep filing papers and pressing towards that mark is the only thing that's going to, save this nation. Only the people can save the republic. But it was a 1934 Enabling Act that gave the authority to the United States Supreme Court to write their own rules. And by 1938, they indeed did write their own rules. And in their rules that they had written, they wrote in Rule Number 2. It's a very obscure statement that they stated in Rule Number 2. It says, It's a very short sentence. It says, there is one form of action, the civil action. And that was written and interpreted by the American Bar Association and taught as fact to bar, you know, the bar minions across this nation. Whereas they believe that what they have done by that act and that rule is they combined equity and common law together and now call it civil action or civil law. And that changes the whole process of who we are. That eliminates the entire Constitution. You know, we were fighting in courts for many, many years, going all the way back to 2000, 2002, and we constantly were ignored. And we were scratching our heads wondering. But over time, we dug this up and started to realize this. And you'll find this on the United States Supreme Court website, Rule 2, that has brought this whole thing together. As far as they believe, you know, that they had, gotten rid of the Constitution, ultimately nullified it.
Right.
The Rules Enabling Act is a very short act. It's only about six paragraphs. And one of the things that it does say in there, and Congress makes this statement, but I think that was done to protect their own behind, they still gave the Supreme Court the authority and power to write the rules, and they haven't done anything about the fact that these rules are repugnant to the Constitution. But under subsection 2072 of the Rules Enabling Act, it says such rules shall not abridge, enlarge, or modify any substantive right. All laws in conflict with such rules shall be of no further force or effect after such rules have taken effect. Nevertheless, Rule Number 2 came into play in 1938 and has held ever since, and we have been governed in the courts under civil law. And, for instance, under U.S. Title 18, which is where we find the penal law, that penal law is not to be applied upon the people. The government has no power or authority to come out after the people. It is the common law court that makes that decision through an indictment whether a crime was committed. And in order for there to be crime, there must be an injured party. And then it is the regular jury, the trial jury or the petit jury, which is to decide whether there's innocence or guilt there. And if there is guilt, they are to decide how they can restore the individual. Because common law seeks not only to restore the injured party, it also seeks to restore the offender, because that's the way God set it up. And restitution and seeing the damage that they have done by restoring that person helps to restore even that person who was the offender. But they have taken all this away. They've refused the Constitution. They've refused. Look, we've been in court a couple of times on the gun laws, and they keep throwing them out of court. Now we're moving that into our case, which is a common law case, which has been open for over 2 years now. So we've been successful in getting papers into the court, keeping the court case open. The judge tried three times to shut our case down. We hit him the first time with a very strong warning, and we warned the clerk. He nevertheless came back and said that he was going to close the case. We then indicted him for, you know, misprision of treason and also for, you know, subversion, treason, ultimately.
Right.
And the second indictment, we indicted him a second time again for treason because, again, he said he was going to throw all the papers out. We didn't come pick them up, and this is just recent. And again, we then hit him with another indictment. We informed the clerks of the court that anyone who removes any papers, that the law requires that any paper that starts a judicial process must find its way through. And it cannot be removed, it cannot be destroyed, mutilated, or concealed. So we told them, if you conceal these papers, you destroy these papers, you remove these papers, we're going to indict you too. And since then, you know, and we did that before, we did it again to advise them of this, and our court case remains open.
You're operating in the state of New York, is that correct?
We're operating in New York State because that's where, you know, where we're located at.
Right.
But this is a national thing. We're in the federal courts. We're just taking it up in the Northern District of New York. Yes.
Can you talk to me a little bit about the state of Michigan structure that you have in place? Because I'm intrigued by what you're talking about, and I think that,
right.
You're perfectly on the same page as I am. You're far more educated,
right,
and knowledgeable, but the same page. Let's use the law to fix the law. So tell me about the Michigan structure of National Liberty Alliance, please.
Well, Michigan, like any other state, has organized their counties and came together as a, you know, unified common law Michigan grand jury, pulling all, you know, the entire state together. But bear in mind, because people, you know, we there's a lot of re-education that people need to go through. People do not understand the difference between equity and law. They don't understand all of the jurisdiction. There are 51 jurisdictions out there, according to Black's Law, okay? And we have, inside of our equity system, we have 57 jurisdictions. Now, people need to understand what that is. They don't need to really understand all those jurisdictions, but generally, they need to understand it in an umbrella way, let's say, of what these laws are about and what the difference is between them, okay? So people don't know that. They also, you know, they lack a lot of knowledge of understanding of a lot of the Constitution, the different articles. Article 1 controls the legislators. Article 2 controls the administration. And Article 3, you know, controls the judiciary. Mm-hmm. And until people become educated, okay, we were fearful of really just creating the system and letting people go, because we'd have all kinds, we'd have as many problems there as we were having already.
I see.
So we came together on a one unified United States common law grand jury. And the purpose of that particular grand jury, and they will remain in session. They're in session now. They've been in session for quite a few years now, I think 3 years. And our purpose is to deal with the subversion against the United States of America, against our Constitution, against we the people, by enemies both foreign and domestic. And it's being dealt with as one, okay? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as we're dealing with this case, which we've been dealing with for now for about 3 years, we're educating the people. We have about 1,000-plus people who have signed up to become administrators. We're looking for 4 administrators in every state. There'll be a paid position, because right now, you know, the courts and the prosecutors are being paid to do this job to orientate the juries. Well, we the people need to do this. We need to take it away from the Fox and give it to the people. And so we're creating that process. And in that process, people are signing up to take those positions, and they're involved in an educational process. We also are writing a handbook so that people can go through this process. Everybody has taken a vow to God that they will operate with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And focus in, of course, on what is truth. How are we going to solve these problems? And so we the people need to take this back and take control over that. And that's what we're doing. But in order for people on the grassroots level to take this control over themselves through these 4 administrators, they need to be educated. We can't send people in there who do not know the Constitution, do not understand the differences of the laws and the jurisdictions, and all those necessary things that they need to know. So they are not in active action at this point. You know, they're not acting in any way. They're just participating on the unified United States common law grand jury, and they're learning. So
now, if you
we're looking, I think next year, I do believe by the spring or summer of next year, we will be in control of the courts. Because really, if you look to see what President Trump is doing, and he's taken down the deep state. Once that deep state has really been totally or mostly annihilated, where the big wigs really start to go to jail, that's when the judges are going to realize that they no longer have a protection. That they've been doing the will of the corporation, the will of the government, and not the will of the law, the justice. And so at some point, they're going to realize that.
And
that's when we will win.
I would like to see James Comey do some jail time, but I'm a little bit more. I'm a little bit more afraid of the thousands of bureaucrats he must have been able to instill in different places within the government structure over his 25-year career. He has instilled thousands of people who are of the same mindset, and I'm more afraid of those bureaucrats that are still able to do such damage to our country and our Constitution. James Comey is just one little cog in the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure. Are you aware of Q, right?
I have heard of Q, yes.
Okay, well, Q, let me tell you, Q has put out a lot of information. And I come from New York. I live in New York. I was born and raised in New York. And we know Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a no-nonsense kind of guy.
I love him.
And anybody who knows him knows he doesn't do anything halfway. He is determined to save this nation. And we have been communicating. It's a one-way communication, of course.
Yeah.
We've been communicating with Donald Trump since before he came into office. His people, it wasn't in his administration back in those days, but the people in his campaign, we came in contact with them out in Oregon during the Bundy and the Bundy problem out there in the Hammonds. And they got a copy of our papers that we were doing. We were doing habeas corpuses and different papers out there. They got a copy of that. They got it to President Trump. He wasn't president yet. And they said that they would like to continue getting a copy of whatever papers we're doing, you know, filing or serving. And so ever since then, we've been sending everything we send into the courts to the President of the United States. We also were copying Attorney General Sessions, and now it's Barr, so we're copying him. We are suing the United States Supreme Court directly for subversion and treason. They have opportunity, you know, we've offered them the olive branch. The olive branch is still there. The day will come when that'll disappear. But we've laid out with no uncertain terms all of the crimes that the United States Supreme Court has placed upon we the people and how they subverted our Constitution. Now, they, you know, these, a lot of these justices themselves in power, okay, they may not have been the partakers that, you know, got this whole thing going, of course, because this goes all the way back quite some years ago.
Right.
But nevertheless, they're allowing it to stand, and they know the truth. And it is true that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, we saw that with Scalia. He tried to put a lot of good stuff out, and eventually they took him out. That's what I believe. And now these people are stuck between a rock and a hard place also. But with Trump in power, and they know what he's doing, they should now have the ability to step up and stand for the people. And we're giving them a period of time. At some point in time, they're going to lose that time. But we're going to give them as much rope as we can. Meanwhile, we are indicting federal judges. And when we put a habeas corpus in and they deny the due process of a habeas corpus for the people's right to face their accuser, okay, and they deny that, that's subversion. That's treason against the people. And so we've been indicting them. We've indicted quite a few, you know, federal judges. We've indicted a lot of, you know, state and local judges, you know, on the county level or the town level, for refusing to obey the Constitution, for taking people's property without the due process, and all these things. Now they sit in a court. They've been filed up in a court in the Northern District. We've opened up under two numbers. One we use as a depository, where we deposit all of the papers of the grand jury, and we have filed hundreds of papers, and we've been following it up there so that we could be under the auspices of the court, which is required for a grand jury to be under the auspices of the court. They're preventing us from coming in the door, but we're putting the papers in there, and we're operating. And so all of that filing has been filed there. We also filed another paper and opened up a common law court. So that common law court, we've been in really in a common law court for over 2 years. And we've been filing papers for three, but we've been filing them in the courts for two now, or serving papers for three, but filing in the courts and serving papers for two. So we've been in the court really for almost 3 years.
John.
And they have remained silent, and now we're in a time of decisions. We're making decisions now, orders and decisions.
John, what kind of media exposure are you getting? Because I see that your website is extraordinarily in-depth, and there's a lot of information on this entire concept. But is the media blocking you? I mean, there's a barrier with the mainstream media to any kind of truth getting through about constitutional rule of law. What avenues
Fox
are you taking?
Fox News won't even report on us.
Nobody will report on us. What?
Fox News won't even report on us. Nobody will report on us.
I gave up on Fox News two years ago.
Many times. Look, I've got three, four, maybe 5,000 different medias, you know, newspapers and different medias, news medias across the entire nation. And we had faxes running, eight faxes 24 hours a day, sending papers to them and also to other and to people in office, you know. So everybody's aware of our existence. In every state, every governor, all of the The legislators in all the states, both legislators in both states are aware of us. Of course, the United States Supreme Court and the legislators in the United States is aware of us. Everybody's aware of us, but nobody's writing about us because, first of all, they can't answer anything we say. And we're very pure. You can pretty much almost call us purists because pretty much 90% of what we write is really, founding fathers, quotes, or it's coming out of history and common law or history of our nation, coming out of our laws and different rulings of the United States Supreme Court that's been solid for many, many years. So they can't argue that.
Yeah,
when
John,
we laid out and showed them what they had done and where the United States Supreme Court has ruled, that rules cannot abrogate the law. They cannot change anything. Rules are rules. And yet with rules, the United States Supreme Court claims to have abrogated the common law.
You say you need four administrators in each state. Can the four administrators be from the same county in a state? As you notice,
four administrators for every county.
I'm sorry.
Not every state.
Oh, four administrators for every county.
That's about almost, 15,000 people on that level to take back the control of the federal judiciary. And on the political side, we need about the same thing. We need about 15,000. So we need about 30,000 people, which is where we're moving towards. But we do see, we are involved with a few things that I can't talk about right now that looks like may explode what we're doing into the Patriots, that the Patriots will finally become aware of us. And once that happens, I think we're going to hit that 30,000 mark quite quickly. And there's some other things that I just can't talk about yet.
Yeah.
But we've been working and struggling towards that goal. But remember, you know, you have to start from somewhere. We started with, you know, just a couple of people in a room talking, and we've ended up, we've got a membership of 8,000 people. We've got, people who have stepped up to take over being a state administrators. Or coordinator, shall I say, and we've got over 1,000 people who signed up to become administrators for the grand jury and the trial juries. So we're organizing, and we've been spending this time organizing, educating, and now filing papers. Mm-hmm. But just to finish an example, and what we're doing, I wanted to just finish up on this. In 2008, when the United States Supreme Court denied the question to do we have still have a right to redress of grievances, and they just ignored us. They met us with silence. Then in beginning of 2009, we elected delegates for the Third Continental Congress. I don't know if you're aware of that. And 48 states responded and met in St. Charles, Illinois, and they produced what was called the Articles of Freedom. It's 62 pages, which gives orders to the government at every level. These delegates also serve the Articles of Freedom on all powers, both state level and the United States level. And then that's when we picked it up in 2016, where the Common Law Grand Jury filed the extraordinary action, where we have hundreds of documents filed, and we've been moving closer and closer. And now, as of August 17th, our court has come to a conclusion, and we are now making orders and decisions and indictments. And it doesn't matter that they don't do anything at this point with it. The fact of the matter is we've done it. It's been filed and recorded in numerous places. It's been served on the Justice Department, on the President, on the United States Supreme Court, both houses of Congress, and the judiciary on 94 federal district courts, and also filed up in the Northern District.
I'm going to stay in touch with you and your organization, NationalLibertyAlliance.org. As you can hear, we're at the show's end. Next week, we're going to do an exercise. It's an exercise in studying the stupidity of a typical legislator's work day. Thomas Paine wrote, "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it." That's repeated by the little lady who loves liberty on the Janice Daniels Show. See you next weekend.